That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Happy day after St. Patrick's Day, everybody. And Kieran, well done on beating Southampton. It must have come as a pleasant surprise to learn they're giving away 3 points for a win these days.
Yeah, it has been quite some time. I was still convinced up until, I think, the 92nd minute that the most we'd get was a draw. And at the final whistle, yes, celebrations were had.
Yeah, and the expected goals. Yeah, only 698 behind what it should have been. Later on, and again, I always sound like I'm telling you this, Kieran, but you know, because we've just interviewed him and you were there. But later on, we'll be hearing from Lee Wood, who is head of academy education at Bolton Wanderers and a very interesting, passionate educator he turns out to be. It's a very good interview. But of course, it's news day, so let's not be controversial. Let's have some news. And let's have some good news, because Wigan Athletic meet Abdulrahman Al-Jazmi, and Abdulrahman Al-Jazmi meet Wigan Athletic. Job done, all over, Kieran?
99% done. The deal has not been finalised in the sense that we've had EFL formal approval, but the administrators did announce that the Bahrainian-based consortium has acquired Wigan Athletic, or the assets of Wigan Athletic. The deal is supposed to be through, go through by the end of the month. A company called Phoenix 2021 will be the formal owners. And what will happen in due course is that Wigan Athletic AFC, or Wigan Athletic Football Club, will then go into liquidation. The name will disappear. And this company, Phoenix 2021, which will be able to pick up the name. So it's a sense of relief, I would imagine, for Wigan fans more than anything else. But I'm absolutely delighted for them. Yeah, we've spoken to Caroline Molyneux on a couple of occasions.
We have, yeah.
With regards to this. We've had Andy Burnham show, you know, his enthusiasm from coming from other parts of Manchester and the North. So, yeah, it's a relief. There's winners and losers, as always. The big question, I don't think, will ever be answered as to why did Al Young buy the club for £30 million and then 2 weeks later wind it up?
Yeah.
The unsecured creditors, it looks like they're going to lose around about 75% of what's owed to them. Staff have been made redundant. So, you know, it's not all good news. And Wigan themselves, of course, have been relegated to League One. They're just above the trapdoor in terms of back-to-back relegations and hoping that this will be a shot in the arm for them. The big winners, you know, the fans have got a club to support. You know, they can start to have those longer term plans. Looking at the board of directors of Phoenix 2021, they do appear to have some people with a bit of football knowledge, a bit of local knowledge as well, which I think is always useful, because if you have a consortium coming into a club with no knowledge whatsoever of A, the industry, and B, sort of the local culture, it can be occasionally a bit of a car crash.
The unsecured creditors are the non-football creditors, aren't they? And I understand they're being paid enough for the club to avoid a 15-point deduction. Is that right?
That's right. So under EFL rules, and I think this is really good of the EFL to have, because this prevents clubs just putting themselves into administration willy-nilly. If you fail to pay your unsecured creditors, who will be the people that supply the coaches for away trips and the pies and sort of things of this nature, you have to give them at least 25% of the sums which are due to them. Now, the deal would not have gone through had it not been for Al Young effectively saying, I'm going to exclude my £30 million that I put into the club or bought the club for in respect of that. So he's completely out of it in terms of money. The other big winners in respect of this are our silver-tongued friends, because the administrators, they've managed to charge £1.6 million, or they estimate they're going to be paid about £1.6 million on the basis of their time costs. But if they sell the club, they then get a one-third uplift, which takes their fees to £2.2 million. And I find this idea of an uplift for doing your job a bit strange. If you do a gig, Kevin, and at the end of the day you go up to the promoter and said, I've just done a gig for you, and people were laughing, so you've got to go and pay me extra. They're going to turn around and say, well, you're a comedian, you make people laugh. Why am I giving you extra money for doing your day job?
Yeah, it's a fair point. And unfortunately, Kieran, if Wigan are one club that's old friends to the pod, another club that's old friends to the pod have got some corresponding bad news, haven't they?
Yes. We've not spoken about Derby for 2 or 3 weeks. So I know their fans were getting a bit twitchy.
We did have a question from a Derby fan about the price of his programme collection on Sunday, but that's about it.
That's right. So there was an agreement to sell the club, which was announced in November. And this was to a Middle East owner. I think it was Derventio Holdings was the UK company. But sadly, it turns out to be fake shake news. And... it looks as if the funds which have been promised to Mel Morris in respect of the deal, it was a case of, oh yeah, I need a little bit more time, and then the club was saying, oh yeah, it's definitely coming in, the money will be before Christmas. And then we got to the end of December and there were issues in terms of wages because Mel Morris thought that Derby would have been sold by then. The club ended up selling some players in January, which I think frustrated Wayne Rooney and co, because he potentially would have wanted to keep those players, but they needed money to go and pay the week by week costs. Mel Morris, you've got to give him a lot of credit. He's got personal issues. He's not 100% of good health, but he has continued to dip his hand into the pocket to pay the wages and the other costs. It looks as if there could, however, be a new consortium involved, and this is headed up by a guy called Eric Alonso, and he's quite intriguing because, until a couple of months ago, he was an advisor to Sheffield Wednesday, another club who appear on the show perhaps once or twice too often as far as their fans are concerned. But he had a big fallout with Delphon Chansiri, who is the Sheffield Wednesday owner, and he's now being linked with Derby. But it does go to show that getting these deals over the line is quite tricky, because I'm also hearing that West Bromwich Albion, they were up for sale, and it looks like that deal might be struggling as well, because once you get down into the small print, people find excuses to walk away.
Now, Kieran, you've known me long enough to know that, for reasons we don't need to go into on this pod, Belgium is my favourite country. I love Belgium. Some of the reasons are not unconnected with your Moscow reasons, but let's, as I say, not go into it. But this is very big news. The Belgian FA voted to merge with the Dutch league.
Yes, they're going to create the Benny League, I think it's going to be called, which immediately, of course, for guys of our age, we start thinking of Crossroads.
We do, yeah, we do, Miss Diane. Yes, indeed.
This is a vote by the clubs themselves for an effective merger to have something which is more appealing to a TV audience. Mm. So I think the present deals that the clubs have in both Belgium and the Netherlands expire in around about 2024 or 2025. So that would give the two sets of authorities to come up with an agreed constitution. There will be complications. You know, what happens, for example, in terms of relegation? Mm. What happens in terms of the clubs that are left behind? Because this is likely to be one league only. There's been some criticism that it really is aimed at favouring the big clubs, the likes of Club Bruges and Anderlecht and so on, in a similar way to some of the proposals we've historically had with regard to Celtic and Rangers dropping into the English leagues. So it's interesting that there was a report done by Deloitte, which reckons it could increase the value of the TV deal by around about 400 million euro a year. So yeah, that's going to move the dial quite well there. Are there precedents for it? Well, yeah, we do have Cardiff, Swansea, Newport in the English league. FC Andorra play in Spain. All the clubs in Liechtenstein, they play in Switzerland. So I can't see any significant objection coming from UEFA. It's interesting times.
Very interesting times, because it's a small country with a complicated history, and I suspect there will be fans of some of the clubs in the French-leaning part of Belgium that won't be particularly happy about joining what is essentially a Dutch league. So that is one to look after. I've been to a football ground in Liechtenstein. I've been to FC Vaduz's ground. I didn't realise it until I'd walked through it, basically.
Liechtenstein or the ground?
No, I went to see, for circumstances that we don't need to go into in this pod. I actually travelled to see Liechtenstein play Latvia in a UEFA qualifier, and it's the first game I've ever been to, including Sunday football, where there was a 5-minute break while a ball was got out of the pond. And this was a proper UEFA game with referees in green shirts and everything. Now, Kieran, I don't like to rake up unhappy memories for you, but 3 days ago, in answer to a question about the financial potential of clubs in League Two, you earmarked Leyton Orient as a sleeping giant. The same Leyton Orient that just announced losses of £3 million in the last year and total liabilities of £10 million. Is your crystal ball on the blink, Kieran?
No, I think the fact that it's losing money now shows that with the right circumstances, that could be turned around.
Well, you sound like Boris Johnson. Yes, we are losing money now, but you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Just call me Rishi.
That's very good. Go on, keep digging.
Leyton Orient, and I've actually dug into their accounts for a whole decade now, and it turns out, and this perhaps doesn't reflect too greatly on myself, is that over the course of the last decade, they've lost 50 grand a week, which I think is indicative of just how difficult it is in the lower divisions. Now, I know that Barry Hearn had a few issues there, and then the subsequent owner proved to be best described as a character, and we all know what character means. In terms of ridiculous rotation in terms of the managers and players, and it all got very messy. There is more stability there now that they've got Nigel Travis in charge, who used to be head of Dunkin' Donuts. If you want my address, Dunkin' Donuts, for that advert, just tweet me. I think it shows that there are huge challenges, because these accounts, yes, there was an impact of COVID, because they cover the rear end of the 2019-20 season, but the majority of the season was pre-COVID. And losses of this magnitude, sadly, are not out of character for clubs in the lower leagues. Where football does go forward long term with regards to some form of financial sustainability is something which still leaves me scratching my head too much.
Mm. we've joked previously, Kieran. In fact, just on Sunday, we talked about HMRC having a kind of Homer Simpson, Shaq attitude to players. There's like two people on their crack team and one of them is off sick. But it turns out we may have underestimated them, because Premier League players could face retrospective multi-million pound tax bills following a clampdown by HMRC on payment of agents' fees.
Yes. What's been happening here is we're aware that agents are allowed what's referred to as dual representation and sometimes triple representation, where they act on behalf of both often the buying club and the player himself. Now, HMRC have said we're quite happy about that. If you are representing the player and the club, therefore, when it comes to invoicing for your services and looking at the Wigan administrator's report, yeah, being an agent can be very, very lucrative, by the way. Mm-hmm. When it comes to invoicing, if you are doing dual representation, then the logical thing is to invoice the player for 50% of the cost and the club for the other 50% of the cost. Now, you know, you and I know is that when we go out and buy something from a shop, we pay VAT on it. And therefore, the same would, in theory, apply to a player. So he has an agent. The agent says, I've got you a transfer. It's you know, my fees are 200 grand on the deal. You pay 100 grand plus VAT. So that's 120. And the club plays 100 plus VAT. But of course, the club is able to reclaim the VAT because it's a trading entity. So what some agents have been doing, they've been saying, well, under those circumstances, we will invoice the club 90% for the price of the deal and the player only 10%. That means, as far as HMRC is concerned, that 90% of the VAT is being reclaimed. And therefore, ultimately, the exchequer ends up with less money. HMRC, by all accounts, are now taking a dim view of this. And they're coming after the players and they're saying, right, we want to see the documentation. We want to see how much you paid. We're going to compare that to how much the club has paid. And if the figures are different, there's going to be a change of circumstances and you will now be liable for the VAT in respect of the transfers. And, you know, we've seen some of the agents' fees. Remember, Paul Pogba's agent, he took around about £26 million from Pogba's transfer from Juventus to Manchester United, where Juventus wanted to sell the player, Manchester United wanted to buy the player, and the player wanted to move. So it wasn't the most difficult of deals to negotiate. Players could end up with a fairly big bill arriving from our good friends, the tax inspectors.
It almost seems a little unfair on the players, Kieran, because I'm guessing a lot of them will never even see the invoice. They're not even really aware of the financial aspects. They're just given a sum of money by the agent after it all, and this is what you're left with. So there will be some very confused players who have said, right, I'll leave everything to the agent, who are now suddenly confronted with the idea that, and of course, yes, they should know, they should be aware of their own circumstances, but some of them clearly won't have been. They'll have left it to the agent, and now they'll be getting a surprise brown envelope, wouldn't they? Which is, I mean, I can give them lessons on not being surprised at a brown envelope coming through, which is mainly to try and get one every week and the shock wears off. But you see my point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think players do put trust in their representatives. It could be that the agent will absorb some of this cost themselves. But equally, knowing some of them, that won't necessarily be the case. There's also managers I'm aware of who are no strangers to brown envelopes, but for legal reasons, I can say no more than that.
That's the good old days you're talking about there. The EFL is considering whether to continue offering fans a chance to watch their team's home matches online, even after fans return to grounds.
Yes, and I think one of the surprising successes of lockdown has been the iFollow service. When it initially started, the quality of the broadcast was hit and miss. Also, people were paying for the service, logging on and getting a picture of one part of the pitch, because it was quite often just one camera there, or the streaming service, the uploading was so poor that they were a good few minutes behind, and the picture kept coming and going. But to give credit to A, the technicians, and B, the EFL, most of those problems appear to have been addressed. And there is a view now that that some fans who, for whatever reason, it could be that they feel that their personal circumstances won't allow them to afford to go to matches and to pay the regular fees. By the time you factor in transport and buying a program and a couple of pints at the ground and a pie and so on, they are looking at continuing the £10 a match for home fans. And I think this will be a really good service for away fans as well. If they restricted it to Tuesday night, if you're Morecambe and you're playing at Southend, that's a journey and a half. If you can do it via iFollow, and I know that there are arrangements with broadcasters that already exist, where I think Sky show practically all the goals anyway. From the EFL, but it's an intriguing development. I'm hoping that it doesn't result in a reduction in the number of people attending, because the atmosphere at grounds is part of the love and the enjoyment of it. But this could be increasing the club's overall income if 300 or 400 people who wouldn't have normally attended pipe up an extra tenner. Wait and see.
But as you say, though, there's a balance, because if you get 300 or 400 people who would normally have attended not doing so, then the club are not getting the money they would spend before the game and at half time on various things. So there will be some smaller clubs who would worry about that, because losing 500 fans if your average attendance is 4,000 is a big hit, isn't it?
Yes, but I suspect this will be done on a club by club basis.
Right. Okay,
so therefore, you'll be able to opt in or opt out. I'm old school like you. I love going to matches. It's the same as would I rather go to Glastonbury or watch it on the BBC? And given a choice, I'd be there like a shot. For any live performance. But people's personal circumstances, and also coming out of COVID, there will still be some people who perhaps have been sheltering. They've got pre-existing conditions. Exactly. They're of a certain age. Where they've made a life decision where I don't want to go to places where large numbers of people are congregating. We know the vaccination is very successful, but it's not 100% successful. And therefore, some people might take the view that they're going to put their own personal health issues ahead of attending football matches.
Yeah, we just used the words old school, didn't we? And there's a row going on between Sam Allardyce and Ravel Morrison. It's very difficult, Kieran, for anybody my age to say there's a row going on without adding out near Slough.
Yes, I thought exactly the same.
just as every it drives Ali up the wall, because every time the BBC Radio news announcer says in the city, I have to say there's 1,000 things I want to say to you. But there's a row going on between Sam Allardyce and Ravel Morrison, and this is it's refreshingly old school, isn't it? The reason for this row.
It is. It is. Still, the biggest regret of my life was I had tickets for the Jam's last ever concert at the Brighton Centre.
Oh, my word, really?
And I'd seen the Jam quite a few times. I used to follow the Jam around. And my kid sister had never seen them. And in an act of ridiculous selflessness, I said, it's okay, I'll give you my ticket. And I'm still bitter about it, best part of 40 years later.
I bet you are. Do you know what? This is for a completely different pod, but the older I get, the more I think the Jam were, without a doubt, the best band of their generation, if not of all time. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Sam Allardyce and Ravel Morrison, it's mainly about agents, isn't it?
Yes. This is a potential litigation by Sam Allardyce. Ravel Morrison went on to Rio Ferdinand's show, which goes out on YouTube. It's distributed via social media. And Ravel Morrison's career is, I think, one of the big tragedies of the last decade or so.
Yeah, him and John Bostock are the two greatest wasted talents, I think, of the last 10, 20 years, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I used to get a Manchester United fanzine called Red Issue every edition. And it was written by blokes. You know what I mean? Our type, again, our age group, they knew their football, and the constant frustration was, this kid is going to throw it all away. But the accusation that has been made by Ravel Morrison on the show, and we cannot, of course, confirm that this is the case, he had an agent and he'd been transferred from Manchester United to West Ham. He had been very successful. There was talk. I think Roy Hodgson was the England manager at the time.
There was
talk about him getting into the England squad. And he's one of these players, you know, the likes of Robin Friday, you know, who was one of the best footballers who didn't really care about football. It's just that he happened to be brilliant at it. The inference is that Sam Allardyce said, we will give you a new contract, we'll give you a better contract, but you've got to change agent to an agent who has, I think, was Sam's agent and also represented some of the other West Ham players. And we hear stories of this nature taking place. Ravel Morrison said, thanks, but no thanks. And then all of a sudden, he's frozen out.
Yeah.
Sam Allardyce says this is complete nonsense. He's feeling wounded by this, and it looks as if this could end up in some form of legal redress, which is always sad. You know, why not just phone somebody up and say, can we just sort this out? Bloke to bloke. There's no need for the legal things because Sam Allardyce has been accused of many things over the years, and people just ignore it. So I don't think this is damaging his reputation. He is a very successful football manager. He is the only England football manager ever to have a 100% record as manager as well.
Yeah, he's also a big fan of ice skating. Dancing on Ice was his favourite show. I managed to get him a ticket once. He was over the moon. Good mention of Robin Friday, by the way. Reading fans who love the Jam will be really misty-eyed now. It's nearly time for our interview, Kieran, but we have a story before that, and then a couple off the back of it, funnily enough. The World Players Union, FIFPro, says it's received claims for more than £40 million from players whose clubs haven't paid their wages. That's a lot of unpaid wages, isn't it?
It is. And whilst we do talk about finance on this show, clearly, and our focus is on very much the domestic game, what we see in many countries are tales of complete lack of governance from the football authorities. So over 1,400 players have contacted FIFPro, and there is a fund which FIFA uses to pay out players for those clubs that have gone bust. And we're seeing this quite frequently in Greece and Turkey, according to the reports. But the accusation is that in some football associations, clubs go bust. There are different insolvency laws to those in the UK, and the clubs go bust having not paid the players. There isn't the same football creditors rule that necessarily operates here in the UK in terms of points deductions if you don't give 100% payments to football creditors, and then the clubs just set up immediately again. And that's why some of the rules were introduced in terms of football creditors by the Premier League and the EFL, and you've got to give those organisations some applause for that. But there are players who are not on big wages. Yeah, they're, when you actually hear about some of the, especially the lower league clubs in continental Europe, because I think we perceive other countries having a three or four division system where there are you can still get really decent crowds in the lower leagues, but English football is unique. You know, our 92 club system is. It is not copied elsewhere, and the crowds. You know, we're talking buttons in terms of the number of people turning up. So there's a lot of players who financially have been suffering. The union is trying to get more money out of FIFA, in respect of this. But of course, you know, FIFA has got its own financial commitments and concerns as well.
Mm. In these more enlightened times for young footballers, a club academy has two meanings now, of course. We spoke to Lee Wood, who's head of academy education at Bolton Wanderers, about the philosophy and finances for teaching young footballers. Lee, thank you so much for talking to us. Is it all right to call you Lee, or should I call you Sir?
No, Lee's absolutely fine.
Great, okay. It's still amazing, even at my age, you still have that thing when you meet educators. You think, oh, I'm not sure, I don't like calling about this. How did you end up, Lee, as the head of academy education at Bolton Wanderers?
Well, I'd love to come on here and tell you an inspirational story of how it was, on a whiteboard somewhere. But, yeah, it was by pure chance, right person at the right time, an opportunity effectively. So, from doing teacher training at the local college, I then was given an opportunity to teach on the BTEC program at Bolton, did an international academy at the time. So I came on board with that, and then, yeah, was filling in inverted commas for an academy tutor. And that filling in kind of, yeah, went to semi long term to a point of where I was offered head of education, snapped the hand off, and that was what, 5 years ago. So I've been with the club 7 years. That was 5 years ago when I took on head of education and not looked back since.
Now, all football fans, Lee, think they know everything there is to know about football, and they're probably aware that young talent at every club is being educated. But what are the legal requirements around the education of young footballers? This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level is, for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Well, obviously, I mean, legally they have to remain in education until they turn 18, same as, most young boys and girls do. In that respect, from an academy perspective, we're governed by the EPPP rulings, so the Elite Player Performance Plan, and that's set out by the Premier League and the Football League collectively. So they give us a set of rules, guidelines, that we need to educate the lads for a set amount of hours per week as part of their training schedule, because they're scholars, apprentices, call them what you will, they're employees of the football club. So that's their, that's kind of their required commitment in terms of when they sign the papers. It's surprising still now how very few players realise that that's in the contract they're signing, but it is. And obviously from my perspective, and a lot of heads of education across the country, all the other football league clubs and Premier League clubs, we realise that the importance and of, you know, educating these young lads, because as we all know, you know, only a very, very small percentage are going to make it to the professional ranks and be able to earn a living.
Yeah, of course, we'll come on to that later on. Forgive me, Lee, but my job on this programme is to answer the idiot, ask you the idiot questions, basically. But who's funding the academies? Are they individually funded by the clubs, or is it centrally funded?
A bit of both. So my understanding from the wider perspective of the funding, it is, so we're Category 3 academy. We just downgraded from Category 2. So depending on your category, there's a financial stipulation you have to meet, and the EFL or the Premier League meet the other half of it as well. From an education point of view, that now is self-funded. That used to be externally funded through the SFA, but now that is through something called a levy. Won't bore you or your listeners with that. But essentially, it's a tax on, and probably Kieran will know this, but there's a tax on the wage bill, and part of that pot that the money goes into, we use that to employ, pay, and educate the scholars in the under-18s.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about boring our listeners. Kieran and I have discovered that their boredom threshold is set rather high. These people, anybody who's sitting down to listen to a football accounting podcast, we're kind of working with different parameters. I'm really intrigued, Lee. You say that players are often surprised to learn that they have to continue their education, because that's obviously a problem for you, because I guess every single young player that you teach is convinced they will become a professional footballer. So what are the challenges of persuading the youngsters of the importance of education?
I mean, varied really. And again, most heads of education you talk to, that's, you know, one of the biggest challenges really, because yeah, you know, the clues above the door of most football clubs, it is football. It's not an education program. We're not a college, we're not a university. But, you know, again, we can take a step back. And when I say we, I don't just mean heads of education, player care officers, safeguarding, welfare, all the other members of staff who are not directly kind of impacting on their football development. We understand that, you know, they've got kind of, a very limited window, very limited opportunity to make it as football player. And we've got a duty of care to make sure that not only we're educating them, but we're developing them, you know, as people, human beings, as well as football players. And my biggest passion really is to do with the transition of, you know, preloading that from day one, really. But it still is surprising, you know, lads will join us. We do school visits, so we prepare them before, you know, they even get offered the scholarship. And when they do, we're straight in at the school and we're explaining what entry requirements are going to need from a GCSE perspective, the programme is going to look like, so there's no shocks. You know, we learn trial and error, as most people do. And, you know, we go, right, well, we need to preload this very early door, so there's no shocks when they come into induction with the parents of, you know, what lies ahead for the next 2 years.
Is that your child in the background, or is the academy taking them really young?
Yeah, no, that's not our pre academy. That's that's my class of one in the other room.
Yeah. Kieran, of course, is an educator, so he'll probably understand this question better than I do. But are they harder to teach young footballers than, do you have to adopt different teaching methods than you would if you were just teaching 14, 15 year olds in a normal school, for want of a better word?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's, you learn the basics at teacher training. You know, it's the needs of the learners and the needs of our learners that they are football players. So you're going to teach them in, you know, not a totally different way. The slight things that, you know, they probably wouldn't notice, but, you know, we do as a, you know, part of the course in terms of how we deliver things, how we, you know, change the method of assessments and things of that nature. But ultimately, it comes down to the basics of any teaching. You know, you build a rapport, you establish trust with them, and, you know, 99.9% of the lads realise that, okay, you know, in terms of what we're doing it because, you know, we have an invested interest in them, and we're doing it because it's the right thing for them.
I'm really enjoying this interview, Lee, by the way, and you're winning best sound effects of any interview guest that we've had on in recent.
Yeah, yeah, it's not just Kieran's doggy backs in the background when the postman comes.
It's all right, I'm used to it with Kieran. Kieran's got a really intelligent dog that opens the door, mainly when it hears my voice. Lee, I'm interested in this one, and I don't want to insult you in any way or other football clubs, but is there a genuine desire, do you think, from most clubs to ensure players receive an education, or for some is the sole focus producing successful footballers, and they're not that fussed whether they're bright or not?
I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I can only speak from, you know, I've only ever worked at Bolton Wanderers, and, you know, in terms of the education part, it's, yeah, 100% that everybody understands the numbers that we're playing with. It is the numbers game, the amount of lads who are going to make it as professional, you know, and even those who make it professional, they might only sign a 1 year, 2 year contract. So it's, again, short-lived. But, it, you know, in terms of, for me, it's the wider development. And, you know, again, I can only speak firsthand of Bolton Wanderers, but across the board, when you speak with other heads of education, when we get together on, you know, conferences and webinars and stuff, is it's a case of whereby maybe not everybody's buying into the wider development and the life skills and the transition. Mm. You know, everybody understands the legal requirements for them to be educated. But it's difficult because you're almost selling them a program that they, at current, they have very little say in. So the LFE, League Football Education, the education arm of the EFL, they basically stipulate what education program they go on. So they do a VTEC level 3 in sport, along with a few other complementary qualifications as well, which are good. But again, we're kind of pigeonholing every single lad, you know, and we take on around 10 scholars per season. So we have over two cohorts, that's 20 in total. And not all those 20 will want to go into sport if football isn't a viable option for them. So it is difficult to sell the education programme to them on that one. But then that's our job to kind of link it into life skills, to link it into transferable career skills, and, you know, to get them to see the purpose of it. There's a purpose behind everything that we do. And again, it goes back to that kind of establishing rapport and trust with them that, you know, what we're asking them to do and what we're doing on a daily basis is good for them.
So I find that very interesting. So you're working to a kind of national curriculum in a sense, and so you haven't got a lot of leeway within your individual system to identify kids who might have a practical skill, for example, or who might be a good car mechanic. You're basically working to a set curriculum.
Yeah, from a football league, Premier League obviously have a lot more freedom because they have a lot more finance behind it. They can do a more bespoke individual education programme. But again, it's nothing stopping football league clubs such as ourselves from doing that. It just gets more difficult because a lot of the time finance comes into it. So, you know, we try and be proactive, and we get approached by, you know, a lot of companies in terms of, you know, doing a fitness gym instructors level 2 or doing a scouting qualification, or like you were saying, you know, if they want to do a mechanics course, they could potentially do that, you know, as an add-on, but it gets kind of complicated of, you know, double dipping in terms of funding and things of that nature. But it is quite limiting, really, and I think that aspect needs to change for the benefit of the lads, and ultimately that's what we're all in football for. It's for the benefit of the lads who, you know, are with the club.
I'm really pleased to hear you say that it is about the youngsters rather than the football club, because I think in the old days, and Kieran will back me up on this, we were all aware of stories of heartbroken apprentices not being offered contracts. Every supporter of every club has heard differently. I mean, it was brutal. It's either well done, son, sign here, or it's please leave the building. So you're part of that process now, I presume. You'll be warned in advance of the youngsters that won't be offered contracts, and you're there as a fallback to offer them other opportunities, or even point them towards other local non-league clubs as well as education opportunities.
Yeah, heads of education are probably, I'm not saying it because, you know, I am one either, but I think they are probably one of the most important people within the academy system, purely because of that, because, you know, football is football. We don't specialise in football. We have no knowledge of football. We leave that to the experts. But again, playing the numbers game, a lot more people will fall out of football, and that's where we come in. And, you know, I'm not just talking about myself. I know a lot of other heads of education, both in the Northwest and across the country. You know, you establish relationships for life with these players, and, you know, you have players reach out. I had one a couple of weeks ago asking me for a reference. Not seen him in 5 years. He graduated in the first group that I got through the academy and didn't get offered a professional contract, you know, fell down the tiers of football, and then ultimately made that difficult decision that he was going to pursue a career elsewhere and not even participate football at a grassroots level. And, oh, wow. You know, he contacted me last week for a reference, and that's a, you know, a really good feel-good part of the job where you're actually helping a human being, an individual, to kind of kickstart their career. But a lot more needs to be done in that area from my perspective, you know, in terms of preparing these lads for life. And, you know, what we do at Bolton, what we do collectively as heads of education within football, there are some great examples, there's some good examples, but I think it needs to be outstanding across the board, and a lot more needs to be done in that respect.
I remember when Steve Parish and the consortium took over Palace in 2010, he was horrified to discover that you're pretty much saying to a 16-year-old, we don't think you're good enough, and now we're sending you back basically to the estate you came from with no help, no fallback, and that's not right. In terms of numbers, Lee, of the two cohorts you talk about, you've got 20 youngsters in the academy. How many of them, or any even of them, would you expect to go on to become professional footballers?
Well, at this moment in time, we had normally recruit around 18 to 20. We have 18 funded places, and obviously there's always some exceptions that will take on some additional numbers. We've got quite smaller numbers now at the moment. Like I said, we've gone down to Cat 3, probably the bottom tier of the professional football league. We've recently just sold one of our scholars to Norwich. So he'll be signing professional. If not, he's already signed professional contracts with them. But in terms of numbers, quite, you know, on average, you're looking at one per cohort will get a professional contract. Now, last year was an exceptional year. Maybe, you know, the financial implications of the club and the academy going down from Cat 2 to Cat 3 had an impact on that, as well as maybe potentially COVID. This time last year, we actually offered four professional contracts. But again, it doesn't stop there. That's not from my eyes, and I can only speak from my, you know, professional and personal opinion. For me, that's not necessarily success, because those four lads are either on a 1 or 2 year contract. So I always tell the lads who get released, you know, obviously, like you said, a lot of them are devastated, but sometimes they're ahead of the curve, because some of the lads that we've taken on as professionals, maybe they get released at the end of this season, maybe they get released at the end of next season. And those lads who are in the same cohort as them, but got released at the end of their 18s, they may already be a year, 2 years into their university degree. They may already be a year into their US scholarship. They may already be, you know, 1 year into their new career, as it were. So they're ahead of the curve, really, in terms of that. It's funny how it works out.
Yeah. Kieran, can I just bring you in there for a moment? What are the financial implications then? Can you tell us off the top of your head about going from a Cat 2 to a Cat 3 academy?
Well, it's a cost issue. The cost of running a Cat 2 academy is around about £1.5 million a year. A Cat 1 is supposed to be £5 million. So if you drop down to Cat 3, it's normally been financially driven, and the club is looking to cut back on as many overheads as it can, which clearly puts pressure on Lee and some of his colleagues as well.
Lee, I was interested to hear you talk about US scholarships. And it was a long, long time ago, a friend of mine who was a useful footballer, but not brilliant, but he ended up getting a US scholarship, and then he ended up playing in Switzerland at a decent level. Are there players who do turn professional and then at the age of 19, 20, 21 will turn to you for advice on further education, who decided they actually like learning, or they want to add another string to their bow? Or is it a case that once they turn professional, your job is over completely as a teacher?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, in terms of fully turning professional, it's very slim, the numbers who, you know, in terms of or want to probably return to education. And normally there's a gap of a fair few years because, they're doing trial and error in their own personal and professional career in terms of that aspect. But for lads who, you know, are trying to, you know, forge a career in football, you know, it is extremely difficult. There's obviously a time frame and a ticking time clock on the US scholarship. So even if they get released from us, they've got a year really in essence before they can be applicable for the US scholarship system. That's a growing, massively growing area. You know, we've got, you know, quite a few lads who are out now there in America. We've got another two going out there this fall. So that's really good. And those lads who go out there, it then goes full circle because we can get them on a Zoom call or a video call to kind of present what their experiences are like. But in terms of professional, there's still this stigma, I feel, within professional football that, you should be giving, you know, I heard Steven Gerrard on a podcast the other week and talking about, you know, being obsessed about being a footballer. And, you know, I've never got to that level. So, not saying he's necessarily wrong. He's obviously had a half decent career. But, in terms of that, it still is good for these lads to have something on the side, whether it's just a hobby, an interest, a passion. Doesn't necessarily need to be academic, education, university. Obviously, if that's what is, best for that player, then great. There are options out there for them to go to university and be a professional footballer. And there's numerous examples of that, even at the very top of the game, in terms of Juan Mata and, Lewandowski. You could get your master's degrees of recent. But it's difficult because there's still this stigma within professional football that you've got to be 100% dedicated to football, only football. Yeah. Give it everything. And I think that sends the wrong message. I spoke earlier about developing the human being. I was watching a documentary the other week and, somebody was saying about these are human beings who just happen to be football players. They're not footballers. And I think if you look at it that way, if you prepare them as a human being, the rest, in my opinion, will follow.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear you say that, because that word stigma is going, is that it? If the very least you can do is take away the stigma of education for these youngsters, or the fear of education, because I'm guessing a lot of them from the age of 4 or 5 would have been identified as potentially good footballers and not encouraged to take school too seriously. And if you can show them that actually there is a lot of fun to be had, I know I sound like an old man here, but there is fun to be had in education. Education is not something to be scared of. And even if they do, God forbid, don't become professional footballers, then they'll be more likely to embrace educational opportunities at whatever level they come. So I think that if that's the only thing you do, you're still doing a brilliant job, I think.
Yeah, like you said, it is difficult. It's a very hard sell. And, year on year, you're trying to find a different, creative and innovative ways to kind of change the program that we run. You play around with not calling it education. We like to call it development. It's, they're learning all the time, whether it's, they're in the gym, in the classroom, on the football pitch, at the training ground, at the stadium, no matter where they are, they're always learning, whether formally or informally. But, in terms of that, I think, again, education, these are young lads at the end of the day, that they're certainly not signing up to do a 2-year education program, with us. They're doing it because they want that opportunity to fulfil their lifelong dream of being a footballer. But if we can just drip feed a few little bits, a few little golden nuggets in there that will last them a lifetime, then, yeah, essentially we're doing half a decent job.
Yeah, if there's one thing to come out of lockdown, it's the fact that there's hundreds of thousands of parents who suddenly got newfound respect for what teachers do. I mean, Lee, we've got two more questions for you. One of them, I'm afraid, isn't as serious as I'd like it to be, but okay. I did promise I'd ask it. But the first one, we spoke to ex-professional Dean Hammond recently.
Yes.
And he told us about the lack of financial education for young players. Should that be part of your role, or is that something you think that the PFA or clubs should be doing?
I think both. Well, I think more than both. I think everybody should be in, and that's one thing from lockdown, this mantra of we're all in it together. And I think that should carry over into football and the education development side of things as well. I mean, I find the PFA, and I know the heads of education do, an extremely good organisation. Every time I've asked them for something, whether it's from program point of view, club academy point of view, or just for an individual player, I've yet to be told no. So in terms of the PFA, they're excellent, in terms of what they can offer. They've got Paul, a transitions officer, who visits us on a regular basis. We've got George, who will come out and meet the under-16s every single year as part of the induction process. There's loads of other points of contact within the PFA that we have throughout the season. But I think it's not just the PFA. It's got to be the EFL, Premier League, FA. Everybody to sit round a virtual or real table, in terms of, seeing what everybody can do. In terms of, in reference to Dean's point, he can only speak from his personal experience, and I'm not here to tell him, whether he's right or wrong. That's his lived experience. But I get the funding issue from the PFA, because as you can imagine, these are young lads and they will flip from one idea to the other. And, the PFA can't just be handing out money left, right and centre for, a quick decision made by a young lad who's just had his dream shattered. He's not going to make it professional. Oh, now I want to go to university. Can you fund me tuition fees for the first year? And they pay out X amount, £1,000. And then after 3 weeks, 3 months, that lad decides, actually, it's not for me. I'm going to quit. I think it's right. There needs to be, a contributing factor from, the PFA. again, every time we've asked, or the players that we've put them in contact with have asked for funding, the lads have been more than made up with the funding that they've got. But I think also these lads have to step up, have to realise the help that is there, the people that are there for advice and support and the financial support. But they've also got to meet us partway of, you know, in terms of asking the right questions, putting their hand up, or, you know, reaching out when they need to. And unfortunately, at some point, as we all do in life, have to dip your hand in your own pocket to go, right, if I really want this, then a small amount of self-funding is, you know, seamlessly a little bit of investment in the rest of my life, the rest of my career.
I'm pleased to hear you have good words for the PFA League, because frankly, they've been getting a bit of a kicking on this pod recently. So that is good to hear. Now, the last question, when we have somebody on the show, Lee, that does a slightly unusual job or is different to guests that we've had before, I often ask my friends if they've got questions, and a couple of the questions I've asked you come from them. But of course, we've all got one hilarious mate who says, ask him this. And I said, well, I'll judge what he's like first. And I think Lee, I've already, in the short time we've been together, I think you'll take this question in the spirit in which my hilarious friend asked it. He wants to know whether your youngsters do PE lessons.
No, they don't. I mean, the 16 to 18, so they do, you know, kind of an elite level PE lesson by training every single day. But
yes.
Our academy players go down all the way to under nine. So if under nine's under 16s, they're schoolboys. They get educated at school. So, in terms of that, they will do PE lessons. They'll be encouraged to do that, encouraged to do different sports. In answer to that question, most of our academy players do. Unfortunately, our under 18s are doing a little bit of a higher level PE lesson on a daily basis.
Do you know what, Lee? That's really disappointing now. I was hoping you'd say, of course they don't. They're young professional athletes. Of course they don't do PE lessons. He's going to be really chuffed about that. Lee, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. It's always really interesting to hear, because we all know our clubs have academies and we all sort of think we know what goes on, but it's really interesting to hear your point of view, and it's really encouraging to know that at least at your club, and I'm sure your example is met at every other club, that the welfare of the young people you're looking after comes before everything else. So that's wonderful to hear. So thanks very much for talking to us, and we wish you well in everything you do in the future.
No, thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Kieran, I thought Lee was really interesting there, and I introduced him by saying these are more enlightened times, but it's clear from what Lee says that he still thinks more could be done to help young players, especially those who reach the end of their playing career at the age of 16 and 17 without a full academic education.
Yes, I can understand it from the player's point of view. You know, it's the career you've always wanted. And if you put yourself 100% into it, it does mean potentially that your education can suffer. So, you know, Lee clearly has had he's got a challenge, but he's very passionate about trying to give these young men an awareness of life potentially outside of football and the importance of education, and also within the game itself, because, you know, we've reported on many stories over the course of this podcast about players who have given their complete faith into other individuals, and it's ended up costing them financially and emotionally as well.
And the problem is, as well, for academy educators, and it's interesting to hear that he's got kids as young as the age of nine, because we all know stories as well of kids who at the age of five or six are identified as really, really possibly talented and possibly professional footballers. So kind of opt out of education at that early age, you kind of go, well, I don't really need to pay attention because I'm going to be a footballer. So by the time they even get to an academy, they're way behind in their education anyway, which is doubly unfair, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, and yeah, there are people whose responsibility it is to look after these children, and that's the schools. It is people like Lee who will come into contact with them at a slightly later stage, but it's also the parents. You know, you and I, we probably both watch park football. We both go along and watch, young football, and, you know, I'll watch anything if it involves a football being kicked around.
Yeah.
And
even Brian.
I used to. I used to referee youth football, and the attitude of some, you know, and it is a minority of parents whose perspective was they saw their child as a gravy boat, you know, as a gravy train. And therefore, all that mattered was his football development, and education was, you know, it wasn't even secondary importance. It was of zero importance at all. And under those circumstances, you know, the child is going to suffer. So, you know, it's great that there are people like Lee around who are so committed towards making sure that these young men are going to have a set of skills which are transferable outside of the football environment, because, you know, we know that, you know, 95% of them aren't going to have a long career in the game. Well, yeah, no, probably 99% of them aren't going to get a full career.
It's a funny thing, the English language, isn't it? Because technically, gravy boat should be one above gravy train, shouldn't it? And yet it means something completely different. I'm really pleased to hear you use the word children, because the 17 and 18-year-old footballers wouldn't thank you for saying so, but we're talking about children here, so it's very important that they're looked after. There are two more smaller stories, Kieran, to end with. And the first is that Walsall have unveiled a commemorative third kit for next season, which features the names of all the fans who turned down season ticket refunds.
Yes, this was a one which came to my attention, and I think you've got to give the club an element of credit here, and also those fans. And we've said on more than one occasion, there's no reason why a football fan should give a refund to a football club. You know, they are independent bodies, and of course, personal circumstances might dictate that you can't afford to do this, or you might choose to not to do it for moral or ethical grounds. But this is sort of a thank you from Walsall. And what they've done is, and the kit looks really good, by the way, is that they've managed to get the name sort of micro woven into the body of the shirts themselves. And I think those fans whose names are on the kit can buy it at a discounted price as well. So I don't think it's taking money away from other kit sales, because if your name's not on it, the chances are you're not going to buy it. You know, it is a way of saying thank you, and you know, hats off to Walsall. And I think some other clubs are monitoring this and might go forward with something of a similar nature.
I do think it is a magnificent gesture. I have to say, though, I slightly worry that it might be divisive, that my finances were such in the early part of the pandemic, we had no idea whether we would earn money again. So when it came to the refund for the games we missed at the end of last season, I took the money. I'm not ashamed to say that, because it wasn't that much, but at the time, every little helped. And I'm not entirely sure I'd be looking forward to walking into a pub and seeing loads of people wearing shirts proclaiming what a good job they did for the club. So that's my only issue with that, and I'm sure there'll be people who feel the same way. Now, I'm really looking forward to finding out the answer to this last question. I deliberately didn't look it up, and normally normally I accidentally don't do any research, Kieran, but this time I deliberately didn't do any research. Why, I ask you, has Bayern Munich's Kingsley Coman been fined £43,000 for driving the wrong car to training?
Well, the reason for this is that Bayern Munich are sponsored by VW Audi. And all the players are, I think they're given VW Audi cars. And Kingsley Coman turned up to training driving a Mercedes. Now, you know, I'm sure most players have, you know, more than one car. You know, they are wealthy young men. But this was a breach of conditions, and he was given a €50,000 fine. And it's, you know, it's sometimes, you know, it is a mistake. I remember an issue with the Russian girlfriend and her sister, where I mixed them up. Well, and that got me a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it does get dark very early in Russia, Kieran, to be fair. Yeah,
yes. Yeah. And they're the same age ish, and.
Yeah, I know. I think we might like to pull a rug under it. You know what, kid? I love that. You know what? We spend a lot of time on this pod trying to explain to people that footballers are, you know, normal young men who just happen to be over. But sometimes they're dimwits, aren't they? Just yes. Some of them are just dimwits. Simple as that. You can't, you know. And if you've got any questions for us about dimwits or otherwise, for our questions pod, which is our next one on Monday, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I'll leave Kieran to say goodbye.
Okay, thanks once again, folks, for all your feedback and your kind words about the show. If you are enjoying it, press that purple button on your Apple podcast or your Spotify podcast. And if you really like it, if you could give us a review. Producer guy tells us that it helps us in the ratings, which is good for the business side of things. And myself and Kevin, we don't understand the business side of things, but you know, he's the person that's in contact with potential guests. And the first thing they tend to do is, who the hell is this show? You know, who are these two idiots? And if producer guy can say, well, yeah, we're number 27 in the charts, then it adds to the credibility. So we are trying to get some guests. And I think we can reveal that in a couple of weeks, we will be having another Scottish football special. Yes. And we will be asking questions because our guest on that day is going to be the head of the SPFL, Neil Doncaster. Neil's a really good friend of the show. So we will be having a chat with them, but also we'll be putting your questions to him. So if you do have questions for Neil, it's questions@priceoffootball.com.
Although so little has happened in the world of football in the last 18 months, I think we're going to struggle to find something to talk about. But yes, I'm looking forward to it. Neil was a very good guest the last time he was on. He was very open and very honest. And there's an awful lot of things to talk about regarding Scottish football now. So yeah, please get your questions to us and we'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
The Price of Football. The Price of Football.